Hi, my name is Jackie. I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 8. I play hard because that's how I do everything. I always push myself to be the best that I can be. Type 1 diabetes does not stop me from doing the things that I like to do.
Hello and welcome to Teen 1D, the podcast for teenagers and young adults living with type 1 diabetes. The podcast is not intended as a substitute for professional medicine advice or treatment. My guest for today is Brandon Green.
Thanks for being with us, Brandon. Let's start just by talking about you.
Yeah, well, my name is Brandon Green. I grew up in a small Texas town called Vanderbilt, Texas, and currently now live with my wife and four kids in College Station, Texas. I work for Texas A&M in the engineering department, not an engineer myself, but I help us develop courses for industry people that come out of our engineering research. And so that's what I spend most of my days doing. And then at nights, I coach my little kids now. So that's that's my role. But yeah, as far as the relevant issue, probably I was diagnosed with diabetes at the age of 10. And so found out I had juvenile diabetes, didn't have anybody in my family that had ever had that. But so it was brand new to us and the family, but kind of started me on a kind of a wild path from there. I actually have a brother who was diagnosed 6 years later with diabetes as well. So we had two in the family. And
wow.
And so that it's obviously altered our life for a while. And then, you know, growing up just kind of had, other than that, was pretty typical in just small Texas towns, played sports. My dad was a coach. My mom was a teacher. So that was kind of a common thread. Went to Rice University and was there for 4 years and then drafted into the NFL. So went and did that for about 5 years and then went back and finished school. And roundabout through a couple of different career choices, I found myself here at Texas A&M and in the world of higher education. So that is where I sit now.
So just for a little bit of background, how old were you when you started playing football?
I mean, I played with friends and stuff, and you know, but nothing official until seventh grade. So I guess that'd be around 13, something like that. So probably 13 years old when I first put pads on, which I remember being really excited to do. But it was also a little scared. and it's interesting when I tell people, you know, I always say, you know, I basically prepped and got ready for a season for 15 years, and they're like, oh, I thought you just played five. And I was like, well, that was professionally, but you know, if you count them all up, it was a lot of years in a row of getting ready for a football season and playing one and then prepping for the next one. So
how did you take care of your blood sugar while you were playing sports in junior high and high school? And does that differ from the way that you did while you were in the NFL?
There was a sharp learning curve that I had to hit. So at first we didn't know what we were doing, so we were just guessing. So you hope that you get better and better at it as you go along. It was, honestly got a little bit easier in many cases. Not in the practice world, and you know, I kind of look at practice and games as being two different things, but practice was very similar and probably got more difficult as I got older. But games got actually a little bit easier once I got to college because you don't play both ways. And so in junior high and high school, I played offense and defense, so it was as much cross country as it was football. And so it is, you know, if you're having low blood sugars, it was just hard to get sugar in you and give it time to react. Where actually in college and on the professional level, it was during games at least would be a little bit easier as far as that goes. But I've started out really using Gatorade and checking my blood sugar, trying to figure out where I was at. And then if I got low, I had Gatorade. Typically was the go to, and that kind of evolved as I got older. And I think in high school, I can't remember, in college, but kind of evolved more to understanding what complex carbohydrates and protein can do in your body and how that can help your blood sugar lengthen out and stay more stable. And so I started to utilize those, especially before games. And then I transitioned to, I think at college is probably where I started this, but using powdered Gatorade, and was able to mix drinks really strong, so I didn't have to drink as much. So I would definitely have days where I would get low a lot, and it was just more difficult to keep it up, and it was a constant battle. And sometimes on those days, having a really strong Gatorade where you don't have to drink as much was nice. And so I did that. It was also really mobile. Powder Gatorade is one of my definite go-tos. I still do it today. I have it in my desk here at work. I have it in my car. I have it at my house. It doesn't freeze. You can kind of put it in all sorts of little packages and take it with you. And you can get stuff in you real quick. Even if you don't have water, you could always just eat the powder. And so it's always, you always have an option. And typically when you're places, you can find water, especially at sporting events. That's one thing they'll make sure is that they have water for people. So, so that was really how I managed it there. And then it kind of evolved. I don't know how in depth you want me to get, but it kind of evolved as I got older and I got better at it. And hopefully, like anything, if you do it for 15 years, you're better at it, you know, at the end of your career. So at the end, I was pretty good. And one of my finest achievements, although I wouldn't advise this, is I went 2 weeks when I had a new coach in St. Louis, and he never knew that I was diabetic. And he coached me for 2 weeks before we met, actually at a fundraising deal. And it was for diabetes. And some of my teammates laughed and said, "Well, Brandy, you should have been the spokesperson at this, you know, at this event." And he couldn't understand why they were saying that. And I was like, "Well, coach, I'm diabetic." And so for me, I was kind of proud of that, although you should definitely inform people better than that. But for me, I was kind of proud because he never knew the difference, which means I was managing it pretty good.
So how did you end up, just to also go back a little bit, how did you end up at Rice?
Rice is known for having good academics and is a good school. So that was important to me because at the time I wasn't thinking football would be a professional career for me, to be honest with you. Yeah, that would be a dream of mine, but I didn't at that time think it would be. I was about 225 pounds, 6'3". I was fast, but so I didn't really see that as like, oh, this is my ticket to the next level. They had good academics, and I felt like that would be a good opportunity for me. It was close to home too, so my dad was still coaching at the time, and I knew that he would be excited to come watch my games. And so it was about an hour and 45 minute drive from our house, and so that helped out too. And then my choices were limited. My senior year of high school, I ended up breaking my knee. Actually, a growth plate in my knee, and had two screws put in my knee. And so that many of the larger schools or just other schools that were recruiting me dropped out of recruiting me at that point because they, you know, didn't know how that would change things. And so Rice was one that stuck with me. And so kind of all that combination of all of that, of they stuck with me and still wanted to give me a chance, even though I had that knee injury. And then just academics, being close to home, all that sort of stuff was good. A little bit of they wanted, I played defensive end, and that was the position they were seeing me at. And when you're young, you're naive. Now they could have put me wherever they wanted to once I got there, but they kept me there, and it worked out for me. So so I was kind of excited about that.
So what was it like moving away to college and living on your own for the first time and playing football, all while managing type 1 and just in general? Like, is there anything you wish you would have done differently? Any advice that you have on that?
That wasn't that hard for me. There were some other things I was dealing with that honestly were a lot more difficult. I had during my 2 days of my freshman year, I lost one of my best friends in a car accident from back home. And so I was kind of dealing with that was the second time that had happened to me in high school. It happened my sophomore year. I lost a really good friend in a car accident. And then again, when I was a freshman in college. So there were a lot of kind of emotional things I was dealing with at the time. So that was probably the hardest, I would say, of just being in a new place and trying to fight through that. And just what, you know, I don't know if it would, you know, clinically be called depression or whatever, but it was tough to deal with emotionally and mentally to kind of work through that. Football was always a great release for me. So it was a way that, I could kind of control my environment, if you want to kind of, you know, psychoanalyze it, I guess. And so that was, it became a place that, you know, if you could control this, then it would work out this way for the most part. And so the better you got at it, the more you could control. So I liked that aspect of it. So football kind of helped in that way. And it did help that I had some really good guys on the team that I bonded with pretty quickly. And you get to know teammates pretty quickly because you spend so much time with them. And so that was definitely a big thing that got me through that, were just my teammates and the relationships we built. And so, you know, that aside, that's a lot to deal with, you know, the academic rigors of of college can be a little more challenging than high school. And so that that didn't really affect me so much, but it takes some time and effort studying. And they kind of set us up for success in there, having different study halls and things to get us kind of on a disciplined path that way. And so, you know, so that was a big adjustment. But, you know, for me, it was moving from a really small town to the middle of Houston was a change. You know, dealing through some of those things in my life that had happened, and then going from typically what you might say the best player on the field, or, you know, the most dominant player, to now at a different level with not being the most dominant player for sure, but feeling like you're getting, at least in my position, kind of beat up every day is you know, very humbling and challenging. And so I think that whole combination makes a very interesting time, but it's also a challenge. And if you're competitive and like that sort of thing, it also is kind of exciting to see and to try to grow into being something better. And so that's kind of where I stood on that and tried to take advantage of it. But so it was challenging for sure, but I had a lot of help. A lot of people helped me.
What did you major in at Rice? And then what did you keep the same major as you came back to school?
Yeah, no, I did when I came back. I had switched about midway through. So I started out wanting to do physical therapy. And so I took a lot of kinesiology classes and working kind of down a track to go to probably get my master's in physical therapy. And then at some point about halfway through, I decided I don't really want to do that. I think I was maybe tired of being in the training room and envisioned it being like that for the rest of my life or something. But I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I switched a little bit more to a business degree. So I actually switched from, it wasn't called physical therapy, but it's kind of a kinesiology type degree. I switched to sport management and economics. And so majored in that and actually ended up being really helpful. I had during my senior year, when I was going into the draft, one of my classes was actually taught by an agent who was an acting agent, but not accepting new clients. And it was really neat. He was a lawyer in town that was was an agent. And so we worked through all sorts of collective bargaining agreements within different sports structures and, you know, the marketing of sports and things like that. And so it was eye-opening to me. And I felt like I had a pretty good idea about what I was getting into on the business side of sports. So that was good. And then when I left, I actually came back. And I believe that the thing was I could finish sport management with one semester, or I could go for two semesters and get sport management and economics. So I just decided to drop economics and get out. So I went back and actually have a sport management degree is what my final degree is in.
And just for our listeners, what team were you drafted with and what year is this all happening in?
Yeah, it was 2003 and I was drafted by the Jacksonville Jaguars. So that was the same year that Jack Del Rio had taken over as the head coach there. And for sports fans, Byron Leftwich was the first round draft pick that year. So he was our quarterback and played there for, it was 2 years. And then St. Louis picked up my contract from them and went to St. Louis and played 1 year and then became a restricted. I got what's called tenured at St. Louis. So then I stayed there another year. So 2 years in St. Louis and then finished up my last year in Seattle, which I did not finish that year with them, but started the year with them.
So what was it like to play for different teams and move to new locations during this time?
Every time you change, there's a bit of excitement, but it's pretty common in that world. And so people get hired and fired pretty much every Tuesday. So, so that's kind of a common deal. So, you know, when you go to you'll go to a different team and the longer you're, it doesn't take very long to be in the NFL. And all of a sudden, you know, guys, no matter where you go. And so, you know, when I went from Jacksonville to St. Louis, there were a couple of guys I had played with in Jacksonville that were there. So that's kind of a common bond. I had actually a coach or two coaches that were there from Jacksonville as well. So you have some familiarity with guys and it's fun. You know, most of the time guys in the locker room are just fun guys. Like I enjoyed all the teammates I had and got along with them all really well. So it was just, fun times typically as far as that goes, but very competitive. So it's, you know, the players stick together in kind of a unique way in the National Football League. And so you're very competitive. And I mean, it's even in practice, it's very competitive. And sometimes you'll, you know, you may even get upset at each other at times, but that usually stays on the field. And then when you, you know, get into the locker room and things like that, and get into kind of living life and things like that, it was a lot of fun. It was very, you know, some teams are different. Jacksonville was a very young team, and I was drafted in there and got to know that draft class really good. And so we did a lot of, there were a lot of single guys in that group. So we did a lot of stuff together from, you know, we would, in the off season, we did a lot of fun things. Like we'd go bowling, have a bowling competition. The losers had to take the winners to dinner. I mean, just constantly competition and things like that, that were fun, where we could make fun of each other and have a good time. And then, do that. So that was fun. And then St. Louis was a bit of a kind of an older team. So it was most of the guys, I mean, there were still plenty of single guys, but a lot of the guys at the time when they got done with practice, I mean, they're trying to rush home to see the kids and, you know, take care of family deals and things like that. So that was a little bit older team, I would say. And so it just, the dynamics were a little bit different, but still a lot of fun. I mean, you still spend a lot of time with guys and developed a lot of good friendships that way. So yeah, every place was a little bit different, but in the end, it's just a bunch of guys in the locker room. It's kind of funny.
How did you manage your blood sugar during game day then? And did you have to be on any special diet while in the NFL?
I didn't go on any special diet. Now, I'm not sure. If I could look back, maybe I could have taken a more concentrated approach on that and found out something that worked better. I mean, like right now, I do basically a low to no carb diet, and my blood sugars are way better than they ever are when I don't do that. And so kind of wish I would have started that a long time ago. I'm not sure what that would look like. One of my issues was always keeping my weight on. So I played at about 265 pounds was probably my average. And that was hard for me to keep that weight on. I had to lift weights hard and I had to eat a lot to make sure that I kept that weight on. If not, I'd drop down pretty quick. I don't quite have that problem now, but I don't lose the weight like that. But back then I did. And so my diet was more on the side of just kind of understanding the things that I was putting in my body and what they would do. Even if you're eating carbs, there's a big difference between, you know, eating dessert and eating, you know, some bread with your chicken or something like that. It's, you know, those are two very different actions that are going to take place in you. And so I did eat pretty healthy. I was very disciplined, probably more disciplined on hydration than I was on food, because I was burning so many calories. Now, there were times that I could, you know, eat an apple and it wouldn't even really seem to affect my blood sugar too much, just because there were so many calories and so much exercise I was doing. But hydration was always an issue too. And so I don't know if you can notice I'm drinking coffee right now, but I've always loved coffee, I guess, ever since I was in college. But I would limit myself to 2 cups a week when I was playing football, just because I needed to be drinking water. And so some things like that I was very disciplined on, probably more so on the drink side. But managing diabetes, it definitely evolved throughout the years, but I started to realize pretty quickly the preparation you do going into an event. And when I say event, like practice or a game or something like that, is going to pay off way more. The more effort you put at the beginning, so much better. It's like anything, so much better you're going to be when the event happens. And really had to do that in a pretty extreme level, because at the professional level, if, you know, they may, I'm not sure they'd feel sorry for you, but if, you know, you have bad blood sugars and you can't practice, I mean, eventually you're just going to lose your job. And so you're either giving somebody a chance or they're going to have to get somebody in there that can actually perform the job. So that was mainly the big motivator behind keeping my blood sugar in a way where I could keep going. But the best is at the end, when I kind of figured out how to go about this, and in the professional world, I had done that, but I eventually, probably one of the biggest breakthroughs is when I started really having a more set plan going into it. And I know there's some information on Type 1 to Go where I kind of developed a sheet for them that talked about like practice guides to going into an event. But what I used to do, which was ended up being really helpful for me, was just kind of segment it in like classifications for my blood sugar. So if my blood sugar was below 90 or below, I would just drink Gatorade any chance I could, because I didn't want to get low because I'd have to sit out. So that was kind of a you start getting at that level with a lot of exercise, I'd want it to be a little bit higher. And now keep in mind, I'm not a doctor, so this is just what worked for me. Everybody may have something different. But then if it was between 90 and 130, I would alternate. So and by alternate, I mean, you know, when you're in football and in most sports, you kind of have a natural rhythm that goes with that sport. And so in football, you're going to have some sort of water thing there with a trainer, or somebody's going to have water for you, and you're going to do some drills and you're going to have a chance to get a quick drink, and you're going to do some drills and get a quick drink. And it's not, many years ago they thought it made you tough, if you didn't have water or that sort of thing, but that's not the case now. You always want to keep your athletes hydrated and you always have that opportunity. And so so I would use those opportunities to manage it. And so if it was between 90 and 130, the first time I would drink Gatorade, and the first break I would drink a little bit of Gatorade. And I just mean, some little sips just to quench my thirst. And then the next time I would do water. So I basically did two Gatorades to one water. And then as my blood sugar increased from that and got up to 130 and was anywhere between 130 and 180, I would just switch it. And I would drink water the first time, water the second time, and then a little bit of Gatorade. And so I just kind of did that two waters to one Gatorade rhythm. And then if I ever got above 180, I drank water. And so it was just, I didn't have to think about it, which was part of the reason for doing that was I knew if I was at this level, that's what I was doing. And so everybody was on the same page as far as trainers and me that this is the plan. This is what I'm doing. And so I needed Gatorade and water is all I needed for that. Now, there was a lot of a lot more that went into it as far as realizing what, not just where your blood sugar is at, but where it's going, which is kind of the whole selling point with CGMs, which I am a big believer in. And it helps me a lot, especially going into an event, because, a 130 blood sugar seems pretty good when you're going into an event. But if you were just 210, 30 minutes ago, well, you're headed, you're probably going to get low before the end of stretching. And so, there's always a little bit of adjustment in that. So I think that's extremely important to know that. And so that's probably the biggest, the biggest breakthrough I did is when I really sat down and made a plan and said, okay, at what point am I going to do it? Because what would happen is you're just trying to make a decision in a stressful environment all the time. And it's just, you got a lot of other stuff on your mind. And so as I've talked to people, I said, the goal is to not think, as a diabetic athlete, the goal is to not think about diabetes the whole time. You got other stuff, it's hard enough playing professional football without diabetes. There's things to think about out there. And you need to be able to think about all those things too, just like everyone else. Now everybody else has issues too. So, but that was kind of my mindset going in, and that helped free up mentally me a lot and just kind of give a direction. And it seemed to work really well too. Now I didn't have a CGM at the time, and I'm not even sure if they had them or they were just coming out or something, but it's not quite like it is now. But I basically was just my own CGM. So I took my blood sugar probably 20 to 25 times a day. And especially leading into an event. So before every practice, I would take it probably an hour out, and then I would take it 30 minutes out, and then I would take it right before I went out. So I knew exactly what it was. And, at 30 minutes, if I felt like I was in a vulnerable spot or had been dropping a lot, I would probably take some complex carbohydrate so that it would be kicking in, kind of midway through practice or so. And then I always had powdered Gatorade there and had the ability to get some quick sugar if I needed to. But for me, that was key. If I didn't do that, if I didn't take my blood sugar beforehand and know where I was at and just took it right before I walked out there and just had one number at a blind spot, is really hard not to find yourself in bad positions. And so that number varied, because on days where my blood sugar was real rocky, those days you just got to check it a lot. And, if you were rocky during the day, up and down, then it's probably gonna be up and down in practice, pretty extreme. And then on days where it's pretty constant, it's probably gonna be pretty constant in practice. And so those days, I didn't have to check it as much. Everybody, like my teammates, knew that, hey, this water bottle, I wrapped tape around it, and we had like my name on it or had painted some stuff on there. And so people knew, like, hey, that was, that was mine. Sometimes I would, you know, let guys take a little sip of it if they wanted some Gatorade, if they didn't have any out there. But everybody kind of knew that was mine. And then I would have a trainer or some sort of process for having a blood sugar meter out there. So that's how I operated it. Towards the end of my career, I did start using a CGM for a little bit. And mainly just at nights, the day before the game, because I would always had a high, I still do. But now that I have a pump that speaks to my CGM and have that technology, my nighttime highs and that what they call the dawn effect, where I get high at night for no reason, has really been limited. But that was always a struggle that I had then. And the frustrating thing is when you wake up high, you wake up dehydrated, too. So when you're going into a competition, and you're already dehydrated, it's harder to perform. The reason I tried the CGM, so at one point in my career, I actually would wake myself up every hour and a half or 2 hours during the night to check my blood sugar to see if I needed to take any insulin. And I always debated whether that was better or getting good sleep was better, because that's definitely no way to live. When that's your profession, you can do some extreme things, yeah. Trying to keep it and trying to be successful at it. So that was my approach. You know, when it started out, I just carried one thing of Gatorade out to practice and hoped it went well. And sometimes I ran out of Gatorade and figured out, well, I can't take a whole case out there. What do I do? And that's kind of where we found the powder Gatorade. And then I started to realize what the difference between, you know, having a granola bar and how that could affect me, and that it really is going to kick in a little bit while later. And so if I'm having a hard time keeping my blood sugar up, if I have a, you know, granola bar 30 minutes or so before I go out there, well, that's going to kick in the middle of practice and keep me from having to, you know, drink a bunch of Gatorade throughout the day. So just little tricks like that kind of helped me out. Protein, I would say, was a big one that I learned too, just how protein can help your blood sugar kind of lengthen out and not be so dramatic at times. And so that was a big help. And then always struggled with overcorrecting. I made sure, like, one of the rules that I made for myself is, especially this happened a lot going into a game, but it practiced too, you know, when you check your blood sugar or you have a CGM, you tend to want to overcorrect a lot to get it in the right place. And so typically before games, if I did that, I would end up crashing at some point. And so my rule was just, as I went into a game, after when I was 30 minutes out, I just didn't take anything else. If I was high, I was just going to go high, play high. And if I, you know, and then it just was what it was. And because too many times I was high going in, and I kept trying to get it down. I kept trying to get it down. And then all of a sudden it all kind of hit at once. It's just, you know, that was no good. And so I think Texas Children's Hospital down in Texas has had a number where they felt like you shouldn't compete. I never really went by that, but I think theirs was around like 350 or so. If you got over that, maybe you should take a break and get out. And so I don't really know, you know, everybody probably talked to their doctor on that. But, you know, a low blood sugar was the one I was most worried about. But as I always tell people, too, you can't just get a high blood sugar and play, because that doesn't work out either. So you got to kind of fight it and work to balance it out. Because, yeah, playing with a high blood sugar is no good. You're not going to be very good that way either.
No, definitely. I've definitely played some game or run some race with a high blood sugar, and that is not fun.
Yeah, you're real dehydrated, and you just don't have the quickness and the explosion that you do with a normal blood sugar. So yeah, don't go that route.
And now you're coaching. So what's that like compared to being a player out on the field?
Yeah, well, I used to coach high school sports, so that was kind of different. But I'm coaching I got four kids, 9, 7, 6, and 3 now. So I got my 9-year-old and my 6-year-old are playing, and so you know, that's a whole different world, but it's fun. It's just fun to go out there and see kids enjoying the game and, you know, dreaming about becoming, you know, stars and getting to watch these great players that are out there now. And so that's, to me, that's the fun, just getting to spend time with my kids and have something that we can bond over.
So you've also published The Coach's Guide for Diabetes. How did you decide to write that, and how did that come about?
So I was working for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, I believe at the time is maybe when I wrote that. But there's a community in really the west suburbs of Houston, and seemed to be a strong concentration of diabetics out there. And I was trying to help and impact that group. And I talked to a couple of the families, and they were, you know, you just kind of hear about different people that are struggling, or coaches that are struggling with what to do with diabetics, and parents are obviously really nervous, and it's really hard with junior high because you usually have a lot of kids and not as many coaches. And it's the first time they've really done organized athletics with diabetes. And so there's just a lot of moving parts that don't know what they're doing, basically. And so the coach's guide was something that I thought would be beneficial that I wish I would have had when I was younger. And that's where a lot of mine stems from, is just, oh, I wish someone would have told me this, or I wish that, you know, I would have had that when I was younger. But a simple thing that someone could print out that would kind of inform coaches of the basics about what they needed to know with a type 1 diabetic athlete. You know, sometimes you'll, in my experience, parents want a coach to become, you know, an expert so they can care for their kid in diabetes. And that's honestly just kind of unrealistic. You know, their coaches are so busy and have so much on their plate already. And every kid, you've got kids with asthma and you've got kids with, you know, all sorts of issues. And so to them, they just really need to know how to make sure your kid is safe. And you know, of course, they can help and encourage them to take ownership of their diabetes. But in my opinion, you get in junior high, you need to start planning some of that yourself. And the athlete needs to start taking a little bit more ownership, and not complete ownership, but ownership in kind of their body. And if you're going to be an athlete, this is something you're going to have to learn to do. People aren't going to do it for you. So there's kind of this, that weird thing in there, but you know, some of the things with that thing I created were from my coaching world, which I knew if it was longer than one page, you're not going to get a coach to keep it up. And so I made it one page where you could put it on the, put it on the door of a locker room or tape it up there or something like that, where coaches could easily see it. And like I said, just get the basics. And then, on the other side of the sheet, or if you wanted to print out another sheet, it was just kind of a checklist if you were, traveling. So, you know, usually you're getting balls, you're getting, you know, towels, you're getting all these sort of stuff whenever you travel with the team. And there's a lot of things. And so usually someone's always in charge of the medical bag. And so I thought it'd be nice for that person just to have a checklist to make sure that, okay, yeah, we do have sugar for an athlete. They do have a way to check their blood sugar. We do have a needle in case we had with some, you know, glycogen or something in it in case something really happened and we needed to give them a shot. And so I thought those were just helpful tools. I had the vision of doing one for every, kind of developing a practice plan for every sport too, because every sport has something a little different, but never really got around to that. And there's also a kind of an individuality, I guess you could say, of planning, and everybody has a different way about going at it. And every place and culture is a little bit different. But in all of that, my experience is the more you communicate, coaches, trainers, parents, if the more that they're all on the same team and communicate with one another and develop a plan, the more that it feels like a team and people are working together. Sometimes stress can cause people to want to divide as opposed to come together. And so usually if you communicate on the front end and have a good plan in place, it helps everyone not get frustrated with each other and know exactly who is doing what the plan is for low blood sugars, for normal day-to-day stuff, things like that. And then, and you can move forward. So that's always my encouragement to people: over-communicate. And that's kind of just one way you can do it.
And as our episode for today comes to a close, is there anything else that you'd like to say to our audience?
I would assume if you're listening, you've either got a kid or you are a diabetic, but, you know, I've been able to live a really fulfilling life, even though I was scared to death and didn't think so when I was younger. I had a PE teacher tell me that I wouldn't be able to play football. I should have to do sports like golf or something like that. So, you know, Mr. Claiborne motivated me in that way, but I proved him wrong and was happy to. But, you know, it's just most of the time that's just out of ignorance. And I will say that you can definitely be a diabetic athlete. It's very hard to be an undisciplined diabetic athlete. And so I think just knowing that going into it helps. But man, you can achieve almost anything you want to. I'm happy, got a family, got a good career, and got to play a sport that I loved for a long time. So so I feel really fortunate in what I've been blessed with. And so it doesn't have to be something that keeps you down. It does make things tougher. You know, there's no doubt behind that, but you know, it also builds character and discipline and things like that in people. So, so go ahead and take the good with the bad too, I guess.
All right. Thank you so much for agreeing to be here today.
All right. Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. That's all for today. If you have any suggestions for future topics or guests, or just want to say hi, don't hesitate to reach out. You can email me at teen.team1d@gmail.com or DM me on Instagram at teen1dpodcast. If you like my podcast, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review, as it really does help me out. Thanks so much for listening, and don't forget to tune into next week's episode. Have a great week. Bye.